Josephine. Help me to welcome Sam now, please.
Sam, alcoholic. I was not aware I was speaking today. I looked at the program and I saw Sam C. from Las Vegas. I wanted to meet Sam C. I guess that's my alias. So, I don't know where to begin. I was raised on a small colony in Las Vegas. I lived there for about 30 years, but that's where I hit rock bottom. Life got unmanageable. I'm a product of an alcoholic family. I would have never thought I was going to be an alcoholic. Absolutely not. Growing up, I saw what it did to the family. I buried a lot of family members due to alcoholism, heroin, whatever it may be. And I was totally convinced that I was not going to be an alcoholic. That's not the fact. The reality is that here I am speaking in to groups of alcoholics. And, this fellowship has saved my life. It's not my first rodeo. It's not the first rooms I've walked into. However, it's the rooms that saved my life. I did not want to come into the rooms. The only reason I came to AA was because I signed a paper to stay in a sober living house, and I had to go to X amount of meetings. I really didn't listen. I didn't. I'm like, I didn't want to hear what you had to say, because as far as I was concerned, I'm not an alcoholic. At least that's what I thought. I think I'm a rare breed. I may be wrong. I did not do the steps. I did not have a sponsor until I was well over 2 years sober. Did I have some willingness? Was I being a service? Yes, I was. My home group is alcohol. Any links? It's a 5:30 a.m. meeting in Las Vegas. That's where I got my first commitment. I still have that commitment. When I first got it, I had to get up at 3:30 in the morning and catch the bus at 4:11. My sponsor today told me, and some of my friends told me, I'm like, that's what has, kept you accountable and kept you sober this past year. It's been real difficult. In January, I had to bury my mother. I was cool with that. I was like, okay, I could deal with this. I'm like, it's not about me. I was okay with that. But as the year progressed, my family and friends kept on passing away. And, I had to address something I would have never thought I would have had to address. And that was emotional sobriety. In November, shit hit the fan. I don't know how many people I lost, but I do know for a fact that I had to bury my younger brother. I got a phone call from my sister, and she's like, Sam Lewis passed away. He was found dead in grandma's house. And I'm like, dude. I was like, okay. I'll be up there as soon as possible. It was very hard for me. A couple weeks earlier, we were talking on Instant Messenger, and he was telling me, I'm like, cousin, brother, I want what you have. I'm like, you're an inspiration. And I was like, this is it. The light has turned on, he's finally realizing things have to change. Unfortunately, it was a little too late for him. This journey has been real difficult for me. I had a hard time admitting to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. I thought I was in control. I thought I was driving. I thought everything, I was convinced that I'm like, everything's going the way it's supposed to. It's working out fine. Steps 1, 2, and 3 were the most difficult steps for me. People typically get stuck on 4 and 9. I'm like 1, 2, and 3 were, yeah, they were real hard for me, especially step one. I didn't want to admit that I was an alcoholic. I didn't want to admit that I had a problem. I didn't want to admit that life was unmanageable. I didn't. I'm like, I had the blinders on and I just didn't want to take them off. You know, I didn't want to hand anything over to somebody, you know, higher than me. I didn't. You know, I had a resentment against God, or, you know, personally, I don't believe in God. This past year, I really have had to do some inventory and reflecting. And, you know, I told my sponsor, you know, what has worked for me for my entire life was when I was young, and even to this day, when I looked up to the sky and like, you know, God, I'm like, give me a message. I'm like, what's going on? I mean, I've been praying. I just didn't. I'm like, I looked up to my grandmother and I'd ask her, I'm like, what's going on? I'm like, what do I need to know? You know? And you know, I still pray to her today. But I completely respect those who believe in organized religion, God, Allah. I'm like, whatever works for you. I'm like, that's what I've been taught in the rooms. You know, I had to humble myself. And, you know, I had to be willing to freely give to others what was freely given to me. You know, and that's what I have done. I met this newcomer about a year and a half ago. She's been a big part of my recovery. There's a club in Las Vegas, and I'm like, she was so afraid to go home. She's like, I'm seeing things, this, and this. And I'm like, we sat outside the club for almost 72 hours in Las Vegas. And, you know, one of the reasons I did that, you know, I shared with her, I was like, you know, before I came into the rooms, you know, I enjoyed hanging out with our elders. I'm like, they would tell us, you know, they would tell me, we'd be gambling, and we gambled for 72 hours one year. And they were telling us, you know, they'd be telling me stories about my great grandparents and the epidemic with tuberculosis, and, you know, how they lived and how they survived. And that's one of the, you know, the reasons I hung out. But I'm like, you know, so the point I'm trying to make is that, you know, gambling and alcoholism is part of my story. And, you know, I've learned that I have to invest just as much time into my recovery as I did my alcoholism, my gambling, you know, whatever I was doing. So that's what I did. You know, I sat there with her and I listened and I told her, I'm like, there is a solution. I'm like, if you come into these rooms, if you want what we have, I'm like, you know, you'll see the light tomorrow. Life, you know, things will turn around. I'm like, you know, she has a cat. I'm like, you know, I'm gonna lose my cat. And I told her, you get your cat back. I'm like, just keep on coming back. You know, you know, that's what she did. And, you know, that's why I continue to keep on coming back. At least one of the reasons. I'm like, you know, I have seen miracles, or at least what I think are miracles. I'm like, you know, people come into the rooms and I'm like, you know, they're like, I just lost my husband, my wife. And I'm like, you know, I see these people today and I'm like, they got it all back. I'm like, they got that car they wanted. They got the job, you know, that they were so desperate to have because they did what they were, you know, what we have been taught in these rooms. They have applied the 12 steps to their life. And, this program, you know, the answers have been, you know, the promises have been answered for me. They have. You know, I would have never thought I would have had my family back. You know, I lost all my family except one person, and that was my cousin. You know, I don't know what he saw in me, but, you know, he still answered the phone. Everybody else was like, you know, I'm like, I had enough of you, Sam. I'm like, you know, I'm not going to deal with you anymore. You know, my cousin and him, my mom and my uncle, my mom and my uncle, you know, I've been in institutions several times, and they always showed up. You know, there was a pattern. I was usually in there during holidays, Thanksgiving, Christmas, and it seemed like every year I was there, and every year they showed up, despite the fact that they had kids and grandkids they could have been celebrating with. You know, I'm fortunate to have survived. I tried to kill myself several times. In fact, I tried to do it 3 times in one night unsuccessfully. I'm like, every time I put that sheet around my neck and just wanted to, you know, lights out, I'm like, somebody walked in the room and took it off. I'm like, damn. I'm like, come on, just give me what I want. You know, I don't know what I would have done without the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I'm a service junkie. I have several commitments. My 531 I've had for 4.5 years. You know, I was sharing in another meeting. Barely anybody shows up to that meeting. And, you know, maybe I'm just, I don't know what it is about me, but something tells me, I'm like, I have taught, you know, I've been taught, you know, we have, you know, it's not all about us. It's a we program. And, you know, it's up to us to keep the doors open. So I sit in the empty room for almost an hour twice a week. And I just wait patiently. You know, people walk in. Sometimes it's, you know, the meeting's halfway over. Sometimes there's only five minutes left, but they got something to say. So I just patiently sit there and, you know, allow them, you know, to say what they got to say. Because at the end of the day, I know these rooms have saved our lives. And, you know, I'd rather them be there than be in a bar drinking. And, you know, that's what I have been taught. You know, my sponsor, you know, tells me, I'm like, when I had as much time as you, Sam, I'm like, you either did the work or die. And, you know, that's what I have to do. Either I'm going to do what I was taught in these rooms or I'm going to die. And I choose to do what I've been taught in these rooms. And, you know, I'm grateful for that. You know, I'm on the Young People's Committee, and I, you know, I've burned some bridges. Some people resent me, hate me, don't want to look at me, don't want to be in the same room with me. But, you know, the fact remains that, you know, we'll always be part of each other's journey. And, you know, I also shared, I'm like, despite the fact that these people have resentments or are angry, don't like me, at the end of the day, if they were to call me tonight and say, Sam, I'm going to drink. I'm at the bar and I'm going to drink. And, you know, I'm going to tell them, I'm like, put the brakes on, put the drink down. I'll be there as soon as possible. Because that's what I've been taught. You know, I got to set my, you know, I got to set all that aside. Just differences, you know, anger, all that. You know, there's a time and place for that. But, you know, when somebody calls and a brother or sister calls and say, you know, I'm throwing it all away, I'm be like, no, you don't have to do that. There's another way to go about this. I'm like, you know, things get lifey, but things are manageable. You know, there's a way to, you know, process this. And, I'll go any lengths to do it. I will. Because I went any lengths to get a drink. I went any lengths to make a bet. You know, I didn't mind stealing from my mom. You know, I didn't care that I was 3 months behind on the mortgage. I'm like, big deal. I'm like, they take the house, they take the house. You know, so what? So, you know, I just, you know, I am grateful for these rooms. And, you know, Like I said, I don't know what I would do without you guys. I don't. You know, I'm like, in February, I had to bury my dad. And I'm like, that was the icing on the cake for me. I honestly thought, I had convinced myself that I was prepared for that dude to pass away. You know, and the other part of me was like, I'm like, the dude's invincible. And, you know, I got a phone call like the second week of February, February 10th, I think, from his girlfriend, like, your dad's in the hospital. I'm like, okay, big deal. He's gonna walk out. you know, I was joking about it and all that with my friends at my home group and went to go eat breakfast. I'm like I said, I'm like, the dude's going to walk out. I ain't in no rush. I get to the hospital. He's in ICU. He's unresponsive. They're trying to get him to respond. He's not. And I'm like, you know, they're giving me all these scenarios. I'm like, he could walk out. He can't. And, you know, things started deteriorating. They're like, well, we could put him on dialysis. And I'm like, put the brakes on, you know. They tried that, you know, they tried that with my mom. It didn't work. I don't know if I want to put my dad through it. So, you know, once again, it wasn't about me. So, you know, I saw things were getting worse. So, you know, I took action and, you know, I got a hold of all his siblings. He has one surviving aunt, so I got a hold of her. And I got a hold of his nieces and nephews. And, you know, it was because those decisions were so difficult, I had to ask the family. I'm like, what do you guys want? What do you guys want? And so I did, because, you know, like I said, it wasn't about me, you know. And, you know, one of my biggest regrets was the fact that before he was in the hospital, several times I had prayed at night selfishly that the dude was just drop dead. I'm like, that he would fall asleep and not wake up. And you know, I'm like conflicted, because I'm like, that day that I came to realization that he was not, I'm like, that was the day he was gonna pass. You know, I was standing next to his bed and I was just like, you know, I had to humble myself and I was like, you know, let him go. I'm like, it's time for him to go home. You know, he's done what he was supposed to do here. You know, he raised his kids. You know, he did the best he could. You know, he used what he had, what he had learned. And, you know, I don't know what prayer was answered. I don't know if the selfish one was answered. I don't know if the humble one was. And, you know, that's something I'm going to have to live with for the rest of my life. But, you know, one thing I know is I'm like, you know, I can't do this for others. I have to do it for myself. But, you know, today, you know, I try to, you know, in a way, I am doing this for my family. You know, I want to be able to show others, you know, that other natives, that it is possible, despite the fact that suicide and alcoholism is rampant. I'm like, there is a solution. Thank you for letting me share.